I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Pennsylvania has just one competitive U.S. congressional race this year. It's in Bucks County. As the candidates faced off in their final debate in Doylestown today, WHYY's Laura Benchoff was there to talk to voters who helped pick the next representative to Washington.
As political campaigns prepare for their final leg with lots of events and TV ads, some voters are just starting to tune in to their local races. Take Joe Guckovin of Pennsburg.
You know, I haven't really followed him that much. It was more up at the, you know, presidential debates and watching all that stuff for the last year or so.
Guckovin is a registered Republican and so says he'll be casting a ballot for the 8th District's GOP candidate, Brian Fitzpatrick, brother of retiring incumbent Mike. But he says he's not really happy about that choice.
I was a little bit surprised. It seemed more like two Democrats up there debating than it was a Republican versus a Democrat.
Guckovin calls himself a strong conservative and says he doesn't feel represented on the national or local stage this year. Fitzpatrick and Democratic opponent, State Representative Steve Sanisero, do share some similar views on things like raising the minimum wage, increasing education funding, and expanding background checks for gun buyers, although they tend to differ on how those policies should be carried out.
You can probably tell I'm not originally from Philadelphia. I'm originally a Texan.
Pat Houston is a registered Democrat. He's wearing a camouflage baseball cap that says airborne on it from his time as an Army paratrooper.
The things that are important to me are education. I'm a senior, so obviously Social Security and Medicare are important to me. I have children and grandchildren, and so it's important to me to take positions that I think will grow the economy.
He says he's a Sanisero supporter, but he likes to listen to Republicans too, because he says no one party has all of the great ideas. With the race tightening in recent weeks, this November, the 8th District seat is within reach of both parties. That means national groups are spending millions to get their candidates in front of voters like Guckovin and Houston. Laura Benchoff, WHYY News.
As news broke today of a new development in the Hillary Clinton email scandal, Republican vice presidential nominee Mike Pence happened to be in Bucks County. The Indiana governor held a rally in Bensalem this afternoon, shortly after the FBI announced it was investigating a new batch of emails that could be related to Clinton's use of a private server.
I know I speak on behalf of my running mate when I say we commend the FBI for having the courage to reopen this case, because no one is above the law.
Trump and Pence face an uphill fight in Pennsylvania, where polls show them trailing. The ticket has been especially unpopular in the Philadelphia suburbs, an area both campaigns are targeting and where statewide elections are often decided. If you were an immigrant coming to the United States around 1820, chances are you'd pass through the Lazaretto. This 200-year-old spot nestled on the Delaware River near the airport was, in many ways, ground zero for public health and homeland security back then. Today, this Georgian-style brick and wood building is still standing, but barely. For years, the Lazaretto was neglected and decaying, but as WHYY's Alana Gordon reports, a municipal project will soon breathe new life into this historic spot.
To David Barnes, the Lazaretto is as important as any Philadelphia landmark.
This place is a treasure. I can't believe that this place is still here. There's nothing like it anywhere in the country, and almost nothing like it anywhere in the world. People should be flocking here from all over just to see the site and learn about its history. And nobody knows it's here.
The Lazaretto is North America's oldest surviving quarantine center. Barnes, a professor at Penn, has spent a lot of time researching and walking around this massive brick mansion and its five-acre campus. But it's mostly hidden here in Tinicum Township, behind a parking lot, banquet hall, and fire station.
We're now standing in front of the main building, looking out towards the river.
The Lazaretto opened in 1799 after major yellow fever epidemics ravaged Philadelphia. Boats and passengers coming into the country from all over the world had to pass through here first and be inspected. The front of the building faces the inner channel of the Delaware. Barnes says if you squint hard enough, you can almost see the parade of 19th century sea vessels that would have been sailing up and anchoring right here.
It's an unparalleled historic resource. This is almost 100 years older than Ellis Island.
If you were sick, you'd have to stay in the Lazaretto's hospital wing. A lot of people died, but Barnes says the majority got better thanks to basic medical and nursing techniques. The Lazaretto closed in the late 1800s. It turned into a country club. But the building's been closed now for more than a decade. Its wood columns are to the point of collapse. Its porches are caving in. At one point in the late 90s, the site was almost turned into a parking lot for an airport. This outraged Herb McCombie, now chair of a Lazaretto Preservation Group. He's also an engineer who works for the township.
That's like taking a beautiful statue and crushing it and saying it's of no worth.
McCombie helped convince the township to buy the property. Long story short, they wanted to do something with it. Preservationists got involved. But for years, they didn't have the cash. Patrick McCarthy is a commissioner with the township. He says they hit a major turning point last year when the township reached an agreement with Philadelphia over airport revenue. That's opened up a whole new stream of funding for the community.
Well, that gives us a steady stream of income. We couldn't justify just spending money that we didn't have.
With another $1 million or so coming in annually, McCarthy says the township finally has the funding to move the Lazaretto project forward. They've hired an architect, and last month they firmed up a contractor. Actual construction and preservation work is slated to begin any day now.
We want to make that the centerpiece of the community township and then spread out from there with the other projects that we have to revitalize the Tenekum Township.
The township plans to move its municipal offices into the Lazaretto. It also hopes to put in a museum and make better use of the riverfront. But city leaders and historians aren't the only ones looking forward to the rise of the Lazaretto. Ghost hunters like Rebecca Brumble are psyched.
It is one of my favorite places, yes. It is totally haunted.
The Lazaretto has attracted attention from all over for its supposed paranormal activity. The sci-fi show Ghost Hunters recently filmed an episode there. Commissioner McCarthy, whose office will be in the building, isn't too worried about this reputation.
I know that one of the commissioners is very, he'll never go in the basement again, shall we say. I won't mention any names, Tom. But yes, that doesn't bother me. If they want to sit down and talk, I'll talk to them.
If all goes according to schedule, McCarthy and the other commissioner's offices in the Lazaretto should be open for visitors, dead or alive, around this time next year. I'm Alana Gordon, WHYY News.
The potential for a SEPTA strike Tuesday calls attention to Americans' views of unions. Let's get moving with Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup poll. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Dave.
Frank, I imagine Gallup has been polling around Americans' attitudes on unions for a long time.
Indeed, since the Depression back in 1936, 72% of Americans approved of labor unions. Fast forward to today, and the number is at 56%. So it's come down some. And actually, if you look at the trend, it's gone up and down over the years. But clearly, it's settled down from the higher levels of support for unions that we saw not only in the 30s, but also in particular through the 50s and 60s.
When was it at a low?
In and around when Obama took office, just about 8 years ago, which is quite interesting. We saw a backlash of some sorts from conservatives in particular when he took office, maybe thinking that unions would be given inordinate power, but it dropped below 50% for actually the only time that we had seen that.
Is there any sense that American approval is based on the concept that wages and benefits accrued to union members, in a sense, raise all boats?
That's an interesting question. 70% of Americans, a direct answer to that, say that being members of labor unions, the unions in general, benefit members of the unions themselves, which is, of course, what it's all about. But only 38% say that workers who are not members of unions benefit from having unions around.
Frank, now, obviously less than 2 weeks out from voting, Donald Trump is equivocating on whether he will accept the validity of the results should he lose. Do Americans accept the legitimacy of the election result?
In fact, we mimic the words that the anchor in the third debate, Chris Wallace, used. We ask Americans, will you absolutely accept the results of this election? And that's exactly what he asked Trump in that third debate, which was held out in Las Vegas. The answer, Democrats, 94% say they will. Independents, 80%, and Republicans, 77%. Look at the Republican number, 77%. That leaves over one out of five Republicans who say no, they won't absolutely accept the results of the election. So Trump, to some degree, a modest degree, I would say, is tapping into some sentiment, or creating the sentiment, don't know which is which, among his Republican base out there across the country that, hey, this election might not be totally on the up and up.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight. In a small theater at the edge of Northern Liberties in Philadelphia, a play is taking on sexual assault in the military. On stage, a mother and her grown son and daughter are torn apart by their devastating experiences in the Army. The play traces the journey of this Puerto Rican family from despair to recovery and a measure of hope. WHYY's Elizabeth Perez Luna reports.
She Wore Those Boots starts in a New Jersey beach town, where her brother and sister are talking about her plans to follow him to boot camp. She's filled with pride at the sense of duty and adventure that led her to enlist. He promises to protect his little sister, even if their mother objects to her decision.
Esto es una locura. You do not have my permission.
Mommy.
I don't understand it, Judelka. How can this be the thing you want to do, hey?
Mom, you're an adult. She's been trying to figure out what she wants to do, and I think it's great.
Oh, sí, perfecto, maravilloso. Tú eres una señorita, Judelka. This army stuff is not for young women.
The spark for this play, says writer Erlina Ortiz, was relatively simple.
I have a cousin who went to the military, and he was always so, I remember him being so fun-loving and very, like, easygoing when we were growing up, and he came back from the military very different. So my interest in sort of like how being in the military affects people probably was sparked then.
Ortiz decided to put herself in the shoes, hence the title, of an imaginary young Puerto Rican woman. She also researched the staggering statistics about sexual trauma in the military. For instance, a recent VA survey found that 1 in 4 women experienced sexual harassment or assault. With the increasing population of women veteran, the problem is bound to increase.
He attacked me. What was I supposed to do? I didn't know what to do.
In the play, Judaica, played by Gabriela Sanchez, tries to tell her brother Abraham that she has been raped. She explained that a group of her fellow soldiers had met at a bar on base. Feeling a little bit dizzy and tired, she was heading towards her barrack when a fellow soldier offered to accompany her. On the way, she said, he invited her to rest a bit in his room and then assaulted her.
Come on, going for drinks, going to his dorm. What do you think he was going to think? You should know better.
You're saying it's my fault?
It's nobody's fault. These things just happen.
Abraham!
That is sergeant to you. Now, whatever happened was regrettable, soldier, and I'm sure you both regret it. Leave it at that and move on. It's over. I said it's over!
His reaction is all too common, says Lovella, a U.S. Marine veteran and a member of the Warrior Writers Collective, who was consulted to make sure the play is authentic. She says it captured the feeling of isolation and alienation that come when rape accusations are dismissed. The ending of She Wore Those Boots works well, she says, because there is an apology, and Judeika's brother openly supports her when she wants to tell her story at a military meeting.
When you're going through this transitional phase where you're struggling to, like, your mind to be clear, and for somebody to come back in uniform that's a service member, that's a man, and that's strong, and that says, I'm sorry and I'm standing with you, that has a meaning to it. Because they understand the residual impact of war and trauma.
Then that was the turning point, I guess. That was like, okay, somebody believed me.
Yes.
She Wore Those Boots plays this weekend at the Power Street Theater at 1211 North 2nd Street near Girard. Elizabeth Perez Luna, WHYY News.
This week, an organization supporting young classical musicians held a concert at the Kimmel Center in Philadelphia to debut its new roster of performers. Every year, Astral Artists selects musicians through a competitive audition process, and this year, for the first time, it debuted its winners publicly. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Crimmins reports on the next generation of musicians.
Natalia Kazarian is a pianist who grew up in the Republic of Georgia, just as that country was separating from what was then the USSR.
Music has always been there for me growing up in the post-Soviet nightmare. There wasn't much else available. It was really something that gave me hope and kept me going. And I just know how important music is to young people especially. I love performing for people. I love telling stories through music.
Kazarian went on to study at Juilliard and is now earning a doctorate at the University of Michigan. For her debut as an astral artist, she performed Gaspar de la Nuit by Ravel, also known as Scarbo.
Scarbo is a night goblin, and he creeps into your room as you're trying to go to sleep. He terrifies you throughout the night. He climbs on the walls and he scratches the walls and hangs on the chandelier. As a pianist, you're supposed to communicate that through elaborate passage work and scary things that are happening in the music. Very, very difficult, virtuosic things.
Kazarian is one of seven emerging musicians to join the ranks of Astral Artists. That's a support organization that selects the artist it adopts through a competition, one of the few classical music competitions in Philadelphia, and the only one to debut its winners to the public. It happened Wednesday evening at the Kimmel Center. Astral Artists Executive Director is Julia Rubio.
Philadelphia hasn't had a major classical music competition of national reputation for the public to enjoy since the Pavarotti International Voice Competition in the 1980s and 90s. So we hope that by opening up our auditions that we will enrich our cultural community.
Astral Artists provides professional development for its roster of artists, such as booking performances, negotiating contracts, and helping artists shape the career they want. One of the winners this year is the Ralston String Quartet. Cellist Jonathan Lowe says he will let Astral book all the quartet's gigs for the next few years.
I mean, that's a tremendous load off our shoulders for them to help facilitate communication between presenters, and those details is incredibly helpful.
The members of the Ralston Quartet are originally from Canada, but now live in Houston, Texas, in residence at Rice University. Lowe says all four members are investing their entire musical careers into this quartet.
Definitely. We're not pursuing other engagements or opportunities beyond the quartet.
Astral Artists will book its musicians into gigs around the world, but all the concerts Astral presents itself will be in the Philadelphia region. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Benyakov, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. Our news director is Eugene Son. At the controls this week, Diana Martinez and Adam Staniszewski. Sandra Clark is Vice President of News and Civic Dialogue. Listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us and have a great weekend. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.